Some of this stuff is stuff that I tried to live out a little bit in my own life. But I've loved even just preparing what I'm going to talk to you about within the context of generosity. I think I'll probably watch some of the other talks because I like this idea of generosity. I don't know what you think about. Well, I probably should have asked you this about 5 weeks ago because I do know what you think about generosity because there's been a sermon series. But putting that to one side, I don't know what springs to your mind immediately when you think of the word generosity. It's probably money, isn't it? That's probably, like, putting the sermon series to one side for now, it's probably like when we think about generosity, we're often thinking about finances like comic relief and what's the other one? Children in need and all those kinds of things. And I found the whole sort of generosity thing an interesting journey. When I first started out doing this, for those of you who don't know, I travel around doing two things, helping people to understand what Christianity is, and the second thing is helping Christians to help people understand what Christianity is. That's all I do, really, and I quite enjoy that. And I've been doing it for quite a while. 3 days before my 18th birthday is when I'm started. I'm 56 now, so I've been doing it a few years. And in the early years of traveling, I learned a few lessons, and one of the things that I always found really interesting is you travel around different churches speaking, and when they give you like a ministry gift, it was, I'm just going to be really honest with you, it was disappointing. You always get concerned when you can jangle the ministry gift. Do you know what I mean? And this one, honestly, this one time, this treasurer of this church came up to me, literally, I'm not making this up, right, put what I later discovered was £2 coins into my hand, and press them into the palm using the words, "There you go, lad, get yourself some sweets." I'm not actually joking in any way, shape or form. There was a bit of me thought, you probably need the money more than me, and everything within me wanted to be generous and give it back. But I did think, no, this will get me some midget gems. So on reflection, it's not a bad move after all. I read this story. I don't know whether it's true or not, but it proper made me smile of how a vicar in this very sleepy Anglican church in a village was very disappointed when, you know, they, you know, like when they do offerings in Anglican church, they often send around quite a big, like, brass plate. It's got a rather grand name called the offertory plate. Okay, and they sent this offertory plate around, and the vicar was a bit disappointed when it came back and there was nothing in it whatsoever. And I don't know if you know this, but what you do is you normally pray for the offering. So the vicar actually ended up just thanking God for the safe return of the offertory plate. So I don't know whether that's generosity or not. But generosity is an interesting thing. And so I've really enjoyed thinking about this generosity idea within the context of giving our faith away and being really generous with how we give our faith away. And rather than seeing giving our faith away as something that we've got to convert people, to see it as this, let's just give our faith away. And so my title in this little theme, this little series, is Generous Faith. Generous Faith. And even before I'd done any preparation, two verses immediately, two sentences from the Bible immediately came to my head. I'm just going to kind of show a highlighted version of those sentences on the screen. This is probably the most famous sentence from the Bible, I think, isn't it? You sometimes see placards at World Cups, don't you, with the words John 3:16 written on them. It's probably the most famous, and in many ways, rightly so, because doesn't it show what the heartbeat of our God is? For God so loved the world, he sent some money. Didn't God's expression to show his generosity to this world wasn't sending us a check, wasn't sending us some finance. not wasn't, there you go, lad, get yourself some sweets. God's symbol, God's act of generosity was in sending his own son. One kind of understanding of his sending himself. Gave himself. It's like that's the ultimate symbol of generosity, isn't it? If you want to know how kind God is, well, he sent himself. I've heard people say that our God is a sending God. And I get the notion behind it, but I think first and foremost, our God is a giving God. He's a generous God. Like, that's why he forgives us, because he's generous towards us. He doesn't pay us with what we deserve, does he? He's kind, he's generous. So that was the first little sentence. And then the next little sentence, which I'm sure has probably come to your mind, so we're not picking up any boulders this morning in that sense, is this one. Freely you have received, freely give. Freely you have received, freely give. It's a reminder, isn't it, to be generous with our faith. And that can involve finance, but it involves all sorts of different things. I try to live by this ethos, and that is I want to be generous with my faith. I want to tell people about my faith, not because I've got to, but because I get to. You see, even in God using us to impact this world, doesn't it show a generosity of God? That, because let's face it, you, just in case you don't know, God doesn't really need us. It, arguably, God's greatest miracle was the creation of the world. And when I last looked, I wasn't there. Human beings were there. In fact, when we did, what happened? We made a right mess of it, as my mother says. We mucked it up, and yet, even though God knows we're just brilliant at messing things up, isn't it incredibly generous that he still wants to use us to show his generosity to this world around us? So I just, when I think about the generosity of our God and the generosity of our faith, it really, really grabs me, really makes me excited that the most valuable thing that we've got to show this world our generous faith is actually ourselves. What I'm going to do this morning over the course of the next few moments is I'm going to introduce to some of you, remind to one or two of you some different bits of research, and then I've got like a triplet of triplets, little practices that you could maybe employ. So this morning's not a classic sermon per se. It's almost like workshop meets seminar meets sermon. Answers on a postcard as to you're trying to work out how you can put those together, can't you? I'm hopeful and prayerful that I think it might encourage you. Just, does anybody here go fishing? John, don't mind upsetting you. Right, okay. No, good. I'm not going to lie. Has anybody here ever been fishing? Okay. That's interesting, isn't it? One person goes, large percentage been. And have decided to go no longer. I love that. I've been fishing twice. Once sea fishing. That was quite excited. I was quite excited about that, rather. I was a bit disappointed because I didn't catch anything. And then when I caught one, I wanted to keep on going. I was very excited. And the other time I've been fishing is like normal fishing, you know, like in lakes. And my mate, a mutual friend of ours called Jason Heron, he loves it. And I'm sat there going, mate, nothing is happening. He went, yeah, that's why I come. I went, okay, but why not do nothing and stay in your bed, for example? That feels a little bit more restful to me. And it was, honestly, it was disappointing. And so the first time I went sea fishing, Emma was with me. We caught some mackerel. We cleaned it on the boat. I say we, the person that I was, and we cooked it for tea that night. That was lovely, really lovely. But the time I went fishing with my mate, we caught nothing. But what I have discovered is those people who go fishing are more likely to catch fish. How deep and profound is that? And if you don't go fishing, you won't catch fish. Some of you are scribbling those notes down. Now, I can see you. Say that again, Matt, because that's deep, deep revelation. Deep, deep revelation. Don't get it the right way round, though. Because if you get it wrong, those who don't go fishing will catch fish. And that's not what we're trying to say. The truth is, we can be very disheartened and discouraged about not having really lovely conversations with our friends about Jesus, or maybe not seeing any of them come to Christ. But I want to suggest to you, as Jesus said, from now on, I'm going to teach you to fish people. The inference being, you're going to have to start going fishing. Now, I'm slightly reluctant to use the phrase fishing in terms of seeing people come to Christ, because although it is a biblical concept, I don't like the idea that we're trying to bait people or anything like that. But you'll allow me to put that to one side and understand that actually, if we want to see people become Christians to connect with our generous God, I think we're going to have to be generous with our faith. There's a lovely piece of research called The Quiet Revival. Who's heard of The Quiet Revival? Give us a show of hands. Okay. Oh, there's a religious word there. Quiet Revival. Okay. So, but it's not my fault. Okay. We've got this little thing going on. There's a bit of Christianese bingo going on, because on at the boot camp, I talked about not using religious words. And so I've got to be on my toes this morning. I'm telling you, but I started, check out the worship songs. That's easy. That'll distract from it a little bit. But there's this thing called the Quiet Revival. And it's a thing that an organization called the Bible Society have run. If we could have the slide up, John, that's lovely. Thank you. And what it's been talking about is, basically, it's been talking about the fact that something is happening. Something is occurring. Something is, and it's not just in the UK. It's right across the world. There's just this insane thing happening where more Bibles are being sold, more people coming to Christ, more people going on to Alpha courses, more people getting baptized, and lots of men. First time in the UK where it seems that there are more men going to church than women, which has not been like that for a long, long time. There's something incredible happening in our world. And I think it presents us with a wonderful opportunity through being generous with our faith to really engage with some people. So I want to encourage you, because if I can just be allowed for a moment to continue the fishing analogy, and here endeth the fishing analogy after this little bit, it gives us a great opportunity to go out. And the fish are there. They're more at the surface. That's the end of my knowledge of fishing, and that's probably wrong anyway. But you get the point that I'm saying there. They're closer to having conversations and finding Jesus than maybe historically it's been in the UK. I've got my theories on why that is. It's not my purpose this morning to explain too much around my theories. But one of the things is, I think we've just been praying a lot more. The increase in prayer, and then couple that with what's happening around the world, is insane. Last week, I was going up to Glossop, which is in the north of England, and I was filling up my fuel in my car at the petrol station in Kenilworth, where I live, and this gentleman came up to me on one of these like mobility scooters, and he just came up to me. He was probably around 60, 65 years old, and he just came up to me, went, "Oh, nice car." I went, "Oh, yeah, no, thank you. I love it as well." He said, "I'm really worried, you know." I said, "Oh, I'm sorry to hear about that. What's wrong?" He said, it's the world. I'm really worried about it, you know." And so I listened to him and I shared a little bit about my faith. I drove up to Glossop, staying overnight to speak again the following night in Glossop. And so in the afternoon when I was in the coffee shop, in the hotel where I was staying, the little restaurant-y bar area, having a coffee, doing some work, I spoke to two people from the staff in the hotel, as well as one person who, like me, was working. And they all came up to me and said, "I'm really worried, you know." And when I asked them why, it was all to do with what's happening in the world. And I suppose, and if you know the Lord, you'll understand this. You know, there's this little sentence that says that we have this peace that kind of passes all understanding. And I know we get a little bit worried and a bit concerned, but we have this peace, don't we? And that's lovely, isn't it? But as I reflected over that moment, I think the peace that I feel has possibly stopped me understanding the peace that people don't feel. I haven't quite quantified the fear, the concern, the worries out there, and actually not just with what's currently happening, but with what's been happening. And that there's something happening because the foundations of the earth are being shaken, and we've been praying. And it gives us a wonderful opportunity to be generous with our faith. I guess if I was to throw a word upon the screen that we might have used and do use to explain about reaching our friends with Jesus, it would be friendship evangelism. Friendship evangelism. Now, I'm not going to lie, I don't like the word friendship evangelism. It's not that I don't like friendship, and it's not that I don't like evangelism. I love both of those individually, but when you put them together, it feels a little bit like evangelistic friendships. That's what I don't like, when they're together like an agendered friendship. So I don't know what you think about it when we put the word friendship evangelism. For those of you who don't know, the word evangelism just simply means being good news, actually. But if I put that phrase up there, I don't know what you think about it. And probably second, I want to ask you another question, is what do you feel about it? Does it make you go, yay, let me at them now? Or does it make you go, don't really want to do it? And I understand either of those concepts. So I've coined a new phrase. I've coined it for this morning, but I'm going to start using it because it's saying the same thing, but in a different way. So instead of friendship evangelism, put a big cross through that. That's annoying. I forgot to bring that cross further forward on that text. We'll do that. There's always something, isn't there, at your PowerPoint. You go, oh, it's driving me wild. Okay, so that one there is supposed to be in front of the word evangelism. So annoying. Text me, please, John, because I won't sleep. Okay, we had a spelling mistake at the other one, which I've now resolved. You'll be pleased to know. Okay, so this one here is actually the same as that. It just feels a bit less agendered because evangelism is about good news. But I wonder whether maybe it might be more generous. It might be a better phrase to say we want to have good news, or we want to be, rather, good news friends. What do you think? Have you got... This is dangerous. I mean, obviously not in this church, but have you got people that you get excited when you see them? That will be in this church. Have you got people that you don't get excited when you... I mean, obviously nobody in this church, okay? But there are some friends, acquaintances, and there is a difference. You know, acquaintances happen, friendships are built. So I think that's the difference, isn't it, between an acquaintance and a friendship. An acquaintance is somebody that you just might meet. You might meet them regularly. Friendship is where you've purposefully built, intentionally built relationship with. But I hope and pray like mad that when people think about my friendship with them, that it makes them feel good. We're not doing a survey on that this morning, just so you know. But I hope that it's positive being my friend. And don't you hope that it's positive being your friend, both to people in church and to people outside of church? And so just that encouragement to avoid evangelistic friendships. Let's make it natural. Friendship with no artificial ingredients. That's what we want. An evangelist, a prophet, and a pastor were in a rowing boat in the middle of a lake fishing. None of them had caught anything all morning. The evangelist stands up and says he needs to go to the toilet. So he climbs out of the boat and walks on the water to the shore. He comes back 10 minutes later, exactly the same way. Then the pastor decides he needs to go to the toilet too. So he climbs out of the boat, walks on the water to the shore. He too comes back the same way. 10 minutes later, the prophet looks at them both and decides that his faith is just as strong as his fishing buddies and that he can walk on the water too. He stands up and excuses himself. And as he steps out, there's a big splash as he starts to drown. The evangelist looks at the pastor and says, "I suppose I should have told him where the rocks were." I love that. It's not always about this miraculous stepping out of a boat to fish for people. Sometimes it's just dead natural, dead normal. An evangelist, a Muslim, and a Catholic father walk into a train station coffee shop. Sounds like another joke, doesn't it? It's not. This evangelist with a Muslim and a Catholic father, we walked into a train coffee shop because the train had been delayed. And we just naturally had a conversation about faith just in the everyday. I like those everyday moments. Those for me are what I want more of. And that's why I love when that bit in the Bible says, "Therefore go and make disciples of all nations," like we've been talking about this morning. My understanding is actually what it really says is wherever. Wherever. So it's not like we're here and we're going focused. It's just like wherever. In train station, at a petrol station, when somebody says they're a bit worried. Doesn't mean you suddenly got to share absolutely everything. All I shared was just how my faith helps me, gives me peace. And it's something that you can know too. I gave them a little leaflet that they could go away with. It wasn't that I suddenly dispatched the whole of the Christian faith. It was just wherever. And I do that all the time. I often say to God, "Lord, lead me to somebody that I can just help on the journey of faith." Doesn't happen every day. Doesn't mean every person that I meet who's not a Christian that I share my faith with. But it happens more often than not. And it's just in the everyday. Emma was going to share a few stories, but she's actually bust her back. So you can pray for her if you want, because at the moment she's flat on her back. She overcommitted and she's struggling a little bit this morning. But I was going to ask her to come and just, because she's got some lovely little stories of just in the everyday. Because I know when we talk about evangelism, we think about somebody who's an evangelist, it's easy to think, oh, well, it's natural to you. And I get that. But Emma, it is natural to her, but she's not an out there evangelist. So let's make it natural. So here's another piece of research called Talking Jesus that was done. Many of you will have heard of the Talking Jesus research. For those of you who haven't heard, this research is the sort of second iteration. It was done in 2015, and then it was done in 2022, and it'll be commissioned again in another bunch of time. And it looked at a whole bunch of factors, and it was a secular research organization who interviewed people all over the UK. So it's just whoever they interviewed on the streets in different places. And it was standard research criteria was applied. So it would be the same criteria as if you wanted to find out how many dogs preferred wet food to hard food, for example. You'd apply, well, I mean, you wouldn't ask the dogs, but you understand what I mean. Okay, so let me just draw your attention to something which I think is really encouraging. So this is the percentage of people who aren't Christians who know a practicing Christian. And you can see the little bits there that highlight the colours. So 53% of people who aren't Christians know somebody who isn't. Well, that's not bad, is it? That's decent. It's over half. I think we can whack that up a little bit. I think we can. So, but let's just go with the positives. Okay, so 53%. And then there's like 4% that don't know whether they know somebody who's a Christian or not. And then there's 42% of people who said, "No, I don't know." Okay, so if we have the next slide, John, please. And this is a little breakdown that they found through asking the questions. How well, so that 53% of people, how well do they know us? And so you can see 31% of it is because it's a family member. 35% is it's a friend. 12% is an acquaintance. 11% workmate, colleague. 8% neighbour. That one I find staggering, that we can live in a community and our neighbours don't know we're a Christian. I feel that's we can do something about these, can't we? And then, as you can see, when it goes down. But this is an interesting slide. So if we have the next one, John, that would be lovely. So this is how those 53% of people who have a non-Christian, have a Christian friend, rather, how do they describe that Christian that they know? And when I found this really encouraging, actually. I thought this was really lovely. So they said they're caring. 50% of them are caring. Don't know what the other 50% are doing, but, I mean, we're obviously in that 50%, aren't we? Clearly. Friendly, 62%. It's quite high, isn't it? It's quite encouraging. Encouraging. I like that. Hopeful. They're hopeful. They're good-humoured. Generous. We can get that up because that's to do with the theme, so let's work on that a little bit. And authentic. And this was the bit that I also found reasonably encouraging, that they didn't have a massively negative view of us. So there are some that are hypocritical, unhappy, naive, selfish, hurtful, homophobic, scores very low, which I was pleased to see, and narrow-minded. And then the other bits, don't know, none of the above. It's just they know a Christian, but they don't really know much about them as a person and what they're like. I show you these slides because I think for those people that know us as Christians, reasonably positive, isn't it? No, I think we can improve that. And I think that's a good start for us when we're thinking about being generous with our faith. How can we improve what people feel about Christians? Because I've often said half the battle is changing people's perceptions. So I think there's a couple of things, well, three things we can do. I'm not unpacking these individually. These are like first of my three little triplets. I've got a friend who's created this goal-setting app called Isaiah 61. You can have a little look at it. I like their groupings. I'm not a big fan of goal-setting apps. There's some because my nature's much more organic. I like to be much more chill out and relational. But I like their ethos in terms of they've got this thing that they want Christians to be able to be. So the first thing is to share life. Share your life with people. And then the next thing is to share your faith with people. And the next thing is to share Jesus with people. And I like the use of the word share, because again, it's this generosity thing, isn't it? It's like, it's not spend my life with people. It's just sharing it with people. Sharing my life, sharing my faith, sharing Jesus. So sharing your life is just about being around people and being a positive Christian influence. And then sharing your faith is about letting people know that you're a Christian and doing it in really natural ways. You know, if somebody shares they're going through a difficulty, why not just say to them, hey, look, if it's okay with you, I'm going to pray about that for you. Not suddenly then grabbing this moment and shaking them on the head and praying with them there and then necessarily, or, you know, suddenly seeing it as a moment to preach, but just to share your faith with them. You know, it might be appropriate that you can share your story, your testimony of how you became a Christian. If you would like some input on that, you're too late because we did that last week in the boot camp. So you haven't had it. There's other ways. But work on sharing your story. It's the best tool that you've got to be generous with your faith is sharing your story, letting people into your life and seeing what your life is about. So share your life, share your faith, and share Jesus with people. If you look at the life of Jesus, it's really interesting. He spent a lot of time. If you took the disciples out of the equation, most of his time was spent with people that weren't part of the church. And the only reason he spent that much time with his disciples is because he was trying to show them how it happens. And it's lovely you see that he shares food with people. I like that. But he shares planned moments with people and unplanned moments with people. He shares over a meal. He shares it impromptu times. He seemed to have time and space for people. I'm sure he had some plans, but he seemed to be able to just create some space for people. And what's really interesting is that Talking Jesus research that I mentioned, there's a further statistic that I want to share with you, which is actually better than what it was in 2015. In 2015, it said that one in five people who'd had a conversation with that Christian that they knew and they liked, okay, so that's an interesting thing, were interested in finding out more about Jesus, either through conversation or through experience. Well, that's quite encouraging, but it's better than that. The most up-to-date research that was conducted in 2022 says that it's now one in three people. That's staggering, isn't it? So one in three people, of the people that you and I are in friendship and relationship with, if we're generous with our faith, will want to know more. Easter's a good way, isn't it? So why not have a little think? Just have a go. Have a go. And if people say no, relax. Chill out. I think so often we're frightened of stepping out in case they say no. But it's fine. Do you want to come to Easter? You might just find that they might say yes. What if they say no? But what if they say yes? What if they say yes? And if they like you, they might just want to find out a little bit more about your faith. And just to remind you, this is happening. It is happening all over the place. I love the story. I preached on this here last year. Do you remember it? Thanks, John. Okay. John chapter 4, the woman at the well. I'm not going to preach it again, but I do just want to reference a couple of things because I just think it's such a great example. So let's just have a look. It says, tired as he was from the journey. Anybody feel a bit tired? Tired as he was from the journey, what did he do? Sat down. Do you think when he did, he groaned? Because I do that now all the time. When I'm tired, it's like, oh. There's a lot more groaning getting back out of the chair as well these days as well. But he was tired from the journey, so he sat down and he asked the lady for a drink of water, and the disciples had gone to get some food. So he was tired, he was hungry, and he was thirsty. So I think he probably needed to chill out a little bit. But what happened from that, as he has a conversation with this lady and they talk about quite a few things, she then goes to see her friends, her community, and say, hey, you've got to come and meet this man who, like, told me everything I ever did. I mean, that's a massive claim, isn't it? Everything I ever did. And then you fast forward on a little bit. It says many of those people believed because of what she said to them. And then it says they urged him to stay. So those people that believed because of this woman's testimony, this story, many of those believed, they urged him to stay for another couple of days. And they asked him some questions. And as a result of that, it says that many more believed. All this happened when he was tired, he was hungry, and he was thirsty. And it wasn't in the plan. I love that, don't you? I feel tired. Got a bit of pain in my knees. It's constantly there. I feel drained. Anybody feel drained through constant pain? Life's busy. Life's bonkers. There's a lot going on in the world. It's easy to feel like really tired, and the thought of being generous with our faith can sometimes make you go, whoa, it's the last thing in the world I want to do. I want to be generous to myself. I want a pampering session, nothing else. But actually, being generous with our faith is not about us just feeling we've got to be the ones that bless everybody else. It's actually about us even allowing people to talk into our lives, care into our lives, meet with us. That's as much about the generosity. It's not just this single-sided thing, I've got to be generous. It's actually about humbling ourselves and saying, I'm happy to let people interact with my life, be involved in my life. You see, here's an important thing that I've noticed. Here's the second of the triplets, okay? Friends talk. Have you noticed that? Friends talk. You get two friends together, they just can't stop, can they? Because friends talk. Let me introduce you. I shared this with the guys on the boot camp. Have you ever heard of Ting and Ted? You've heard of Ting and Ted. Ting and Ted. I wanted to introduce you to Ting and Ted. Ting and Ted is interesting and interested. That's Ting and Ted. In our talking, let's be interesting. And let's be interested in people. And when we're interested in people, it means we don't have to do all the talking. So it means we're not suddenly feeling we've got to put everything out there. We've got to do everything. So here's a little question for you. Who in your life has it been a while since you've talked to them? I'm thinking about people that don't know the Lord. You can apply this to church as well. Who in your life has it been a little while since you last talked to them? And who in your life have you never really talked to? Now, don't burn yourself out here, because like Emma and I, we were just reflecting when I was preparing this talk. We know so many people, and it is insane. You just can't meet with everybody. You can't talk to everybody. So don't suddenly go on this mission and burn yourself out. That's not the aim. Because I think you can only really be genuinely generous with a small number of people, can't you? If generosity means going above and beyond, I don't think you can do that with everybody. And I don't think you can let everybody do that to you as well, because they think that you're a bit selfish and you never buy a round at the pub. Do you know what I mean? But it is about when we have those conversations, let's be interesting what we talk about. And let's be interested. What is it that they need to tell us about? So friends talk, friends meet. Never underestimate hospitality. Never underestimate that. Never underestimate even just hosting somebody for a coffee or some food around your home. We've kind of got a little bit out of the habit. Though it's interesting, in the current financial climate, it seems to be that more people are doing this more and more because they can't afford to go out and eat in restaurants necessarily. I got a Starbucks the other week, £6.50. £6.50. I'm not getting one of those again. What's that, sorry? I don't know where you're going to Starbucks, but it does feel like a glass of water sometimes, doesn't it? So the cost of things has gone crazy. But let's just invite people around to our home for some food. Let's have different kind of home groups. It's underrated, but I think it's such a good thing. So who in your life could you think, I'm going to invite them around for food for the first time maybe? Or who maybe that you haven't invited for some time, could you invite them around? And then finally, in this little section, then I'm going to race through the last few bits. Friends care. Friends care. So who in your life do you think, actually, it's not immediately obvious I care for them, but I want it to be? Who do you need to maybe show some care to for the first time, or show some care to again because it's been a little while, because life has got absolutely crazy bonkers. How many of you know that that's the case? And sometimes you get quite intentional, haven't you? Because friendships are built. Acquaintances happen, but friendships are built. A friend of mine's written a brilliant book, a guy called Phil Knox, on friendship. I encourage you. He goes into the psychology of friendship and what happens in relationships and friendships. It's really, really interesting what happens. Going to race through the next few bits. One of the dangers of writing a talk that you're delivering for the first time, you're never quite sure how much time you're taking. So we're going to race through the next few bits. So make it journey-based. Thanks, John. It's when John starts putting you on the next slide, you realise you've got to speed up your talk, isn't it? It's like, if he goes to the last slide, he's saying, finish it, Greenie. Finish it. Don't let you control those slides again. Okay, make it journey-based. I've got some resources at the back. I'm not going to take time to talk about them this morning because I think many of you are aware of them. Come and talk to me at the end. But I've produced a whole lot of resources, including this book, about how we can really journey with people. So I would encourage you, come and chat to me at the end and be generous with what you buy yourself to equip yourself, because journeying with people is really important. Okay. Piece of research, we're going to fly through this, we'll scroll through then. Can you go to the Finding Jesus piece, please? That's perfect. Really interesting. This is one of the most recent piece of research is that the Evangelical Alliance commissioned. I was involved in the early stages of this. And it identified how people became Christians who became Christians in the last 5 years. It's really, really intriguing. Okay, if we put the next slide on, John. What helped people most on their journey to faith? The people alongside them? And the opportunity to ask questions. That proved so crucial. So again, let's be generous with our friendships, but let's be generous with helping people to explore. When they ask questions, don't see it as them trying to trip you up. If you want to learn some of the practical ways that we can answer questions, we're going to be doing that in the next bootcamp session. You can come to those, even if you haven't been to the first sessions, that's fine. So create the opportunities for people to ask questions. What people wanted most, time with people, patient discussion, to see authenticity of how life and faith go hand in hand. That's an interesting one, isn't it? Hospitality and practical kindness. That's what they really, really appreciated the most. Next slide, John, if we may, please. So this is like how people became Christians is 35% was from a person or people from a church other than a leader, a close friend, a small group of Christians, and then church leader or family member. But it shows, doesn't it, that people want to journey with somebody, to be in some sense of community is really, really important. And then the next slide, but look at this. This is where you have to dig deep. I know you can't see these. We can make these slides available, actually, if that would be helpful for people. But I just wanted to quickly show you these. Look, these are what the questions were then that they were asking. What was the most challenging as you explored the Christian faith? That's the title of that screen. For some reason, it's not on the screen. But these, look, difficult aspects of Christian faith, believing I can be forgiven, understanding Bible, personal struggles, historical truth of who Jesus is. So all that stuff still plays an important part. So we need to get a bit genned up on that so that we can journey with people. Okay, last 3 minutes and then we're done. Is that all right? So look at this. Two key stats for you here. 75 to 90%, it's been revised a bit recently. 75% to 90% of people who become a Christian do so because somebody walks with them. These are the statistics that Alpha would use to base the whole of what they are doing. But this is an extra stat. It's also been estimated that within 12 months of a person coming to faith, they lose quality contact with their people, their friends that aren't Christians. So that's quite disturbing, isn't it, in some ways? So I think there's a real need for us. Again, it's not about ramping up the contact just so we can fish. It's not evangelistic friendships. But if we want to be generous with our faith, I think we have to be generous with our story, our time, our life, and make sure that we're connecting with people. So what's the response from here? This is the third of the triplets. Okay, prayer. We need to pray. Pray for people, Maybe you could pray that God gives us the opportunity to pray for people in person as well as for praying for them by name in our own lives. So that would be one thing. That's a practical thing we can pray. Next one is care. This little triplet's not my own. This is one that J. John talks about, and I quite like it. Prayer, care. Just let people know that we love them. Let people know that we care for them. And then the final word, share. Prayer, care, share. We can all pray, can't we? I think we can all care. Some of us might feel that maybe we can't share as easily, but we can work on that. We can improve on that. But I think if we're going to be generous with our faith, let's remember we can share life, share faith, share Jesus. That friends talk, friends meet, friends care. And let's do prayer, care, and share. And I think that will show the world just how generous, just how kind our God is as we reflect his generosity. Should we pray? Let's pray. I'm going to invite John to come and lead us to end our service in a few moments. But I wonder, just as a response, really, and this is not a guilting response, I wonder whether maybe we might just reflect and say, okay, who are the people in my life that I haven't talked to for some time, or that I need to start to talk to? Who are the people in my life that I haven't met with for some time, or that I've never met with? And who are the people in my life that I haven't really shown that I care for them for some time, or I've never really shown them that I care for them? And I wonder whether you could just, for a few moments, just in the privacy of your own heart and mind, whether you might bring some of those people. You might not even know their name. It might be the postman. It might be somebody at the bus stop. You don't even know their name. You've had some chats with them. You've maybe done that habitual glance and smile at. That sometimes feels a bit awkward. And I wonder whether you might just bring those before the Lord and say, Lord, would you show me how in some way I can be generous with my faith towards them? So just a few moments of stillness as you reflect and offer that prayer in your own heart and mind. Then I'll pray, and then John will lead us to close our service. So, Lord, we just offer ourselves before you and ask that you would help us to be, generous with our faith. Lord, help us not to go crazy and bonkers for some of us where we're that kind of all-in type of person. Lord, help us not to burn ourselves out, but just to start to begin to be generous. And it'll start maybe by just being generous with our life and time. Just creating a little bit of margin so that you might lead us to people like the woman at the well. I pray this in Jesus' name. Amen.